Welcome to another episode of Book Club Appetizer. We're your hosts, Abby
and Alana. We're two book lovers from readitforward.com.
We're here to make sure that book club doesn't feel like another item on your to-do list. We've got it all. Exclusive author interviews and on-site discussion questions that provide ample food for thought.
Plus, if you're looking for actual food, and after books, let's face it, that's our favorite thing, we've paired our monthly book picks with an appropriately delicious appetizer and cocktail. Check out readitforward.com/podcast for the appetizer and drink recipes for June's book selection, provided to us by our friends at Tastebook.
There's a lot of celebrating in the book we read this month, from milestone birthdays to high school reunions, and the perfect thing to celebrate occasions with is...
cake!
Yay!
We think the main character would absolutely love this slow cooker peach upside down cake, which is so sinfully good and easy to make. And slow cooker? Hello?
Yeah. And to go alongside it, we chose a refreshing drink for summer... homecoming iced tea, which is just simple sweet tea jazzed up with a sprig of mint and some citrus flavor.
And of course, in true Book Club appetizer style, if you want to add a splash of rum or vodka to yours, we think that would probably be just fine.
Alana, very good idea. So if you're new to Book Club appetizer, here's how this works. Alana and I start each episode by recapping the plot and characters of a book we've recently read and loved.
Then, Abby brings the author into the studio for a quick reading and to answer some questions. We hope it feels like the author is enjoying some sweet tea right next to you. Before we go any further, of course, we have to warn you. This podcast contains plot spoilers.
Good warning. This month, we read I Almost Forgot About You by Terry McMillan, which centers on Dr. Georgia Young, an optometrist living in San Francisco. She's got great friends, this warm, loving family, and a solid career. But despite all that, she feels totally stuck and restless.
Right. Which, you know, could be prompted by the fact that she receives an invitation to her high school reunion.
Ooh.
And simultaneously gets some sudden news that a past flame of hers from college died at a tragically young age. She wonders why she never told him she loved him. She starts thinking about all her past loves.
Yes, and this is where it gets interesting. Georgia decides to find them all.
All of them.
With the help of Facebook, of course. We don't think this could have been possible in the pre-Facebook era. But she wants to tell all of these men, you know, what they gave her. She wants to remember why she loved them in the first place. And she also says, I want to apologize. I want to explain. I want to forgive them.
Yeah, I really like what you just said, that in an era pre-Facebook, would this book have really been possible? And I didn't really think about how the important role that technology played in this. And she mostly wants to find out that they're healthy, doing well, thriving in life. And it's a noble search to want to find out about the men you once loved. Would you ever do that?
Oh, my God. I don't think I could, even with living in the Facebook era. I'm not sure I'd be as brave as Georgia is. I think some of the past relationships should stay in the past. But, you know, Georgia is also brave not only in finding, tracking down all of these men, but she also is brave in that she decides to confront some of this restlessness head on. You know, she's not afraid of potentially starting over at age 55, you know, with either a new career or a new home or even a new role within her own family.
Yeah, it's like the most constructive midlife crisis anyone
exactly.
could possibly have. And, you know, she's opening herself up at the same time to the possibility of new romance and adventure. And that, to me, was the most important part of the book. This inspiration to live a bit bigger, never slow down, and it's never too late to reinvent yourself. Just ask Madonna.
Oh. Yes, or even Terry McMillan herself. You know,
yeah.
Her career totally launched into superstardom when she wrote Waiting to Exhale in 1992, which, of course, was turned into one of our favorite movies of all time.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, she's written countless bestsellers since then. So she certainly hasn't slowed down at all. And definitely I could see Terry's signature wisdom and sass that she infused into the character of Georgia, which just made Georgia so relatable and so funny.
Yeah, for sure. There were definitely times I found myself cracking up at George's observations. They're just so blunt and honest and
spot on.
Yeah. So whether it's about social media or being a grandmother or even her relationships with her besties, George's character just, I don't know, she jumps right off the page. And I think her words will resonate with pretty much anyone who's ever had self-doubt, dreaded an upcoming reunion, perhaps speaking from experience over here, or wanted to shift careers and wondered about the past.
Yeah, and Terry does such a good job of making this book filled with lots of depth. You know, she also weaves in these serious threads like race relations in this country and, you know, possibly dating outside your race, LGBTQ rights. This book has a lot of meat to it.
So we know you're going to have tons to talk about. But before we let you all get into your discussion, stay with us. Because when we come back, author Terry McMillan and her signature sass will join Abby in the studio to give us some more insight into her writing process and the inspiration behind her novel.
This is Abby Wright with Read It Forward, and I'm here today with author Terry McMillan. Hi, Terry. How are you?
Hi, Abby. I'm fine.
Going back to Waiting to Exhale, allow me to read this quote that I believe you once said. You wrote Waiting to Exhale in 1992. And you once said that, quote, it seemed that a lot of college-educated women of all ethnicities were having a tough time getting a date, which meant a boyfriend or a husband was almost out of the question, me included. The cover story of just about every major women's magazine focused on how and where to meet the man of your dreams. Women in their 30s who thought they'd done everything right were finding themselves alone and often lonely. My girlfriends and I were among them. I think a lot of women related to the women in Exhale for this very reason, knowing they weren't alone, that other women were going through the same thing, and that their expectations weren't too high. And this resonates with me as a 30-something woman so many years after 1992, when you originally wrote Waiting to Exhale. So what do you think has changed or not in our cultural landscape for women and dating?
On some level, I feel sorry for younger women in your age group, to be honest with you. I mean, I think that's one of the reasons why dating websites are so popular. I mean, I don't want to, I'm not trying to, I'll say it and I don't really mean it. It's almost a sense of desperation that a lot of people are willing to seek out complete strangers.
Yeah.
That you don't know anything about except what they tell you. Even in some websites if they've been vetted.
Right.
But even that, I find it really sad and scary on some levels. Mm-hmm. But at least back then, we had magazines to tell us what we were missing. I mean, it was on the cover. I'm not kidding you, because I was like, what is going on here?
Right, every cover line.
I mean, the newsstands, and I was living in New York then. Mm-hmm. I couldn't believe it, and I said, you know, there's some truth to this. What is up with that? And in the black community, it was worse for us. But I don't know. I think now my attitude is the same for younger women as it is for women in my age group, even though I don't have the same level of courage. And I think my so-called popularity has also made me back away a little.
Yeah.
But I just think women just need to be a little bit more aggressive and upfront and just ask a man, what's your name?
Yeah.
How are you today?
Yeah.
What do you do? Can I buy you a drink?
Exactly.
You know, I mean, you know, I just think women need to be more forthcoming and honest about what they like. And if you see someone, you want to meet them, just introduce yourself.
Yeah.
You know, you're not committing to the rest of your life.
Yeah.
And if he rejects you, so what?
Yeah, move on.
Move on. Because I think, too, that social media, I mean, I have nieces, they're so desperate, they're willing to take anything.
Yeah.
And I don't think that a lot of people, women, I hope, have not gotten there.
Dating 101 from Terry McMillan. I like this.
You know, because we have been taught, and it still doesn't seem to have changed. I mean, you have some women who are just, you know, what's your name? I used to be like that. I mean, some people don't need anybody else, and I think a lot of us do, and there's no shame in that. Mm-hmm. It's right up there. Loneliness, to me, is right up there with mental illness. People seem to be afraid to admit it.
Yeah.
You know, and there's no reason to be embarrassed about it. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of us are afflicted, and you learn to live with loneliness. You learn to live alone, and there's a difference to me with being alone and living alone and being lonely. Sometimes they can be one and the same. It's not a healthy way to live to me for a long period of time, even though we learn to adjust to almost anything.
You have a new book, which mm-hmm. I'm so excited about. Can you tell us a little bit about your main character, Georgia, who in a lot of ways is asking a lot of these same questions? She's looking for reinvention. She's looking for a man.
She's not.
Okay.
She's not looking for a man.
She's looking for a few from her past.
Oh, yeah.
To
she's
reconnect.
Looking at them.
Yeah. Oh, okay. That's a better way to put it.
Yeah.
So what do you hope people take away from this new book?
That it's okay to change lanes at any age in your life. What used to lift your hem may not lift it anymore. And you don't have to be afraid to say, I'm bored or I'm tired and I don't want to do this anymore. And I'm going to take a chance.
Terry, I know you're a reader. How would you describe yourself as a reader? What are you drawn to? What do you gravitate towards?
I read two different types of when it comes to fiction.
Yeah.
I like stories that are so unlike me that as I read them, I become a participant. I absorb everything about them so that it becomes real. That's like, and you know, like at first I had a broken ankle and somebody said, oh, Terry, you should watch Downton Abbey. And I was like, oh, not a bunch of rich Brits.
Yeah.
Okay. And then I watched the first episode. And the next thing I know,
You know,
6 weeks later, my cast was off. I had watched the first two seasons, you know, and I was like really into it. And my reading is, I just want to read something that makes sense to me. Mm-hmm. And that the struggle that the characters are going through is valid and not some trumped up stuff just to make me, I don't like literary masturbation. You know, don't just let me try to fall in love with your words because I can imitate anybody, okay? I want to read a story that's going to move me and change my view and make me stronger. I like reading books that aren't maudlin, but are about people that get through stuff in a way that I would not necessarily do it if I were in their shoes. But the beauty of it is that when a writer can put me there so that I feel like, I mean, like even like Holden Caulfield, okay? I mean, like, oh, I was little Holden.
Yeah,
I'm still little Holden.
Exactly.
But I try to read, I like to read stories that lift me up. I don't want to read about a whole lot of depressing. I might start out navy blue, but you better have me up in a cloud when I'm finished.
Yep.
And I want to arrive there. I want it to be earned. So even if I'm just light blue, it's okay.
Celeste Ng?
Yes.
Oh, I just finished Everything I Never Told You.
Yes, honey. Oh, yes.
Oh, God.
Whenever I read a book that just moves me, when I finish, I do one or two things. I just place it gently in my lap, or I throw it on the floor like, thank you!
Yes.
And then I go run and pick it up. But there are so many, right? There are not a lot of characters that I can say I really, because a lot of these people, what they're going through, I wouldn't want to be them.
Right.
I really wouldn't. What I respect about other writers is the choices that they make and how, in some cases, the story chose them. They didn't, it wasn't an intellectual decision that they made. Like, I think I'd like to write a book about slavery. So, you know, let me go do a little research.
Right.
I don't think it's like that. It was more like a gravitational pull. And I can tell those books when I start. And in some cases, especially if it's a new writer, I can tell what lured them. And those are the writers that I respect. And characters that are dealing with realistic problems. Yeah. A lot of them out there, and I'm so glad.
Thanks so much, Terry. Now.
What now?
The suspense must be killing you all. Now we're going to hear a clip from the audiobook edition of I Almost Forgot About You, narrated by the author. So enjoy.
So everybody's not on Facebook, and everybody can't be Googled. Last night before I went to bed, I took a peek at my homepage, and apparently no one wants to be my friend. The only thing I see is a photograph of an old school and bold letters that say, 40th Class Reunion. Have I really been out of high school for 40 years? I'm almost ashamed to admit I've only been to one reunion, and that was the 10th, and I left early. By the 20th, I'd pretty much forgotten about high school for the same reasons you don't reminisce about kindergarten when you're headed to middle school. Nevertheless, I decide right here, right now, that I'm going to this one. Why, I don't know. IRSVP. Besides, it's a whole year away. I have no idea what to expect or if I even remember some of the nerds and sluts I graduated with. What I remember most about high school is heat, tumbleweed, and dust. I was popular but not well-liked because the word had gotten around that the reason I was in so many honors classes was that I had skipped two grades in elementary school, putting me in the same grade as Roger, my older brother, who decided to skip college to join the Army, which is how we lost him at 22. There weren't very many black kids in my high school, and I often felt lonely. I'm so full of shit, I was just bored to death. By my senior year, I was tired of all the do-nothing clubs and couldn't wait to flip my tassel. I generated even more adversaries once the word got out that I wasn't going to Cal State Bakersfield, but rather to the University of California in San Francisco, bitch. But that's all behind me. I now have a good incentive to lose 20 pounds by this time next year. I log out, or off, whatever. So, since Wanda opened her big mouth about the order I should consider looking up the five but probably seven men I loved, I'm also curious about how many I've had sex with. Since my social calendar isn't exactly backed up this evening, I've decided to dig out my old phone books to see how many of these guys I can resurrect. Back in the day, I used to save every single phone book and bought a new one only when the pages started falling out or when so many folks had been crossed out because either they'd moved too many times or the number had changed so many times, which meant it had probably been disconnected for non-payment, mine included. And sometimes I had to look at my own phone book to remember my new number. I always wrote the date the new book started and ended on the back cover with a magic marker, which is why I never bought a black book. I put my current address on the inside page so I'd be able to remember where I'd lived when I got old and nostalgic like I'm feeling now. Last but not least were the people I just wanted out of my fucking life for one reason or another. So I'd either draw lines through their names or a wide X or scribble so hard I'd sometimes rip right through the page and shred the person on the other side. This left many a phone book looking more like a scratch pad, which is what forced me to buy a new one. Times have sure changed. As I grow older, I realize there's something to be said for nostalgia and not getting rid of stuff that holds memories, which is pretty much your personal anthropology and can document your evolution on so many levels. The same can be said for all the photographs. I separated them by what I call my wonder years from all the branches and leaves that constituted my entire family. I have some cracked black and white photos of my grandparents' grandparents, who were slaves in Alabama and Mississippi. For stupid reasons, I tossed my yearbooks a long time ago. I didn't want to remember those folks, and I also hated my pictures. I was not even close to cute when I was young. This was, of course, before I discovered makeup, and I don't want to question my hairstyles back then, because it'll just make me think about headbands.
Thanks for listening, readers. We have some reader questions on our site, in addition to a link to the awesome Spotify playlist that we put together to accompany Terry's book.
Yes, lots of good 70s disco tunes and R&B. And if you liked reading I Almost Forgot About You and want to read more books like it, the Read It Forward team has your back. We've suggested a few recommendations on readitforward.com/podcast. We're over here producing monthly episodes centered on fantastic books we think you should read with your book club. So when you need something new to read, come see what we've been devouring.
And whether you've been listening to our podcast from the beginning or are a new listener, if so, hi. We'd love to know what you think of our show. Take a minute and leave us a review on iTunes. We would really appreciate it.
And don't forget to follow us on Twitter @ReadItForward and tweet about books with us. Happy reading and cheers!